Okay, welcome to another fine edition of Movie Madness. And this week, my guest is a former colleague, former journalist, and the founder of NB Inc. Media, my good friend, Melvin Bankhead.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
Well, that couldn't have been any more awkward. Doing pretty well, actually.
All my introductions are awkward. You know, it's an awkward way to start. It's like stand-up comedy, you know, when you get out there and you hit the stage. You know, I know this. Obviously, you're a hilarious guy, but you're not a stand-up comic. You know, like, the opening is always awkward. People are just staring at you, waiting for you to say something funny.
Yeah, but they're supposed to, like, just applaud and bow before me when I walk in a room, so this digital remove is just so disempowering.
I guess I've, you know, my one goal during quarantine was never to be part of a Zoom conversation, anything to do with Zoom, and I've accomplished that so far. How about you?
I conduct meetings with clients by Zoom almost every day. Board meetings by Zoom, depending on the organization, once to three times a month. So no, I ended up getting caught in the Zoom trap.
Well, you founded your own company since you left the Buffalo News where we met, and so obviously, listen to you, board meetings. What's going on there? Is your company really taking off?
I joined the board of trustees for the Charter School of Inquiry. It's an East Side-based, pretty much elementary school, for lack of a better word, pre-K through sixth grade. And I'm also on the, what's the word I'm looking for? The, sorry, my brain just froze. I'm on the board of advisors for Hilbert College's journalism program, their Department of Media Communications. And I'm on the board of directors for the National Association of Black Journalists Buffalo chapter.
Oh, wow.
I've been a little bit busy.
Yeah, you made me tired of just by saying that, because I am on no boards. Although, you know, I was on a kick where I wanted to be on a board because I guess it looks good on your resume, but I couldn't get on a, I don't know, how do you get on a board? You have to things?
People hear about you and they send you a message saying, hey, would you be interested in doing such and such? And then if you're smart, you say no. And if you're not, you say yes, and then you find yourself in often very, very boring meetings wondering how you got yourself into this. And then you remember you volunteered.
What do you guys do? I mean, you basically just sit around before pre-Zoom. I mean, you know, you would just get together and discuss stuff, right, with snacks? Is that basic? Like, what does a board do?
General Board of Directors, what we're responsible for is making sure that the organization is operating at, say, peak efficiency. For example, over at the Charter School, CSI, we're pretty much in charge of the goals of the school, what the school wants to accomplish. We'd hire, say, the principal, for example. We set the strategic goals of the school. For the BABJ, roughly the same thing, except more in this case, it's more hands-on. We're trying to figure out what things do we want to accomplish, what kind of events do we want to hold in the community, which COVID has made that really, really difficult.
Right.
So we haven't had any in-person event since February. So as for, the first board I was on was for my church, of all things. The Episcopal Church, their boards of directors are called a vestry. And in that case, we're seeing the financial health of the organization, which is also what we do at CSI and with the BABJ, as well as the direction that we want the entity to go in. So in that one regard, boards are pretty much all the same. It's just a matter of who you're on the board with, what the focus of the organization is, and whether you have a high tolerance for long, boring meetings.
Oh, well, yeah, that's probably why I would never make it as a board member. I'd be out. I'd be out after the first time.
I think you'd actually do pretty well. You would bring a good and welcome sense of humor to the proceedings, which, believe me, is needed more often than not.
I'm sure. Well, wow, you're You're a good person, Trey. You're really giving back, though. That's a lot of boards. That's a lot of your time.
Yeah, but I mean, I run my own business now, so it's not like I have to worry about some other some job schedule. I schedule my own stuff now.
Right,
so that definitely comes in handy. The only way that that's going to change is in a little less than a month, I'll start teaching public speaking over at Hilbert College.
That sounds nice.
Oh, yes. All those innocent little minds for me to mold.
You could fill it with anything. Well, no.
Yes.
You're being on the school board for the charter, the charter school. It's because I know your daughter's already in college, right? So you're just doing this because you want a better community.
Yes, basically. My daughter's in college at Kent State. I find it ironic that you mentioned that this podcast is about media and things like that, because my daughter's going to Kent State for digital media production for film. And she just started her own YouTube channel about film and media and TV. So.
Oh, is she interested? Maybe I should have her on the podcast if she's into movies.
Oh, gosh, yes. That could be really, really interesting and a little bit frightening. But yeah, sure. I'll ask her.
Well, you know, I'm a movie expert, and I would like to, especially someone that's just learning, like if she's deep into the genre, that would be interesting. But let's go back to your time at the news. How long did you work at the Buffalo News?
18 years, from August 2000 to July 2018.
And here's your chance to air all your grievances.
Why? My time is done.
No, I know. Well, you didn't really have a problem anyway. I mean, you're not like our good friend Colin, who had some problems with the management. I mean, you were just...
Well, I'm not in a position to speak about what went on with Colin. For right. me, all jokes aside, the number one problem I had at the Buffalo News is the fact that upper management was not really willing to listen to any ideas that did not come from them. So, case in point, upper management, not newsroom, but upper higher, like the publisher and the vice presidents, decided to create a magazine called Gentry, which was designed to cater to the top income earners in the Western New York area, specifically rich men. Huh. Now, with Buffalo being one of the poorest cities in the country, you would think that it would dawn on them that this would be a spectacularly bad idea. However, it didn't. Even though, as I understand it, the female vice president said no for HR said no, this is a really bad idea, and the woman that was second in command of the printing said no, this is a bad idea, and yet they ignored them and went ahead anyway, and the backlash was massive. Because you have a magazine that's telling you, hey, you can buy a yacht here in this really expensive car that costs more than your child's college tuition here, which is just so outside of the realm of experience for so many people. It just looked like that the top people at the news were completely out of touch with the community, which, of course, they were.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you should. I don't know. Now, I'm not defending anybody, but obviously the publisher is not from Buffalo. So he doesn't, you know, at least like Margaret Sullivan was from Lackawanna. So she had a kind of a feel for what was going on. Yeah, Buffalo doesn't care about, the majority of Buffalonians in Western New York doesn't care about yachts because we don't even have any. Why would we try to buy some? Or, you know, we like trucks, or they like trucks. I don't like trucks, but you know, your basic car, we're not buying too many Maseratis.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. So, for the most part, most people here aren't rich enough to have that kind of thing, or to say, walk into a jewelry store and drop a few $100,000 just on a whim. But that's basically what the magazine catered to. And it published its first issue. I believe it managed to get through issue two. And then it was canceled because the backlash was so big against the news. And you got to remember, this is the same newspaper that years earlier had a huge racial backlash against it after the City Grill shootings.
Well, that was under the leadership of Margaret. But she, in her defense, she did recently publish a article listing what she learned from that experience.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I read that. Now, here's the problem, though. You said that was under Margaret, and Technically, yes, she was the editor-in-chief of the paper at the time. However, Margaret was not there the night that that story went through the news desk. If memory serves, she was actually on vacation.
Oh.
So it wasn't Margaret that made the call to override the copy desk and do that specific headline that really, really angered the black community. That wasn't Margaret's call that night. That was someone else's call who is also no longer at the news. So, but then she was caught in the unfortunate position where she had to defend her paper against a decision she didn't make.
Right.
On national television.
Right. That did, that was, oh man. Was that like 10 years ago?
That feels about right. I've lost track of the actual time period because right now during COVID, you can't really tell time passing. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, well, I know it was quite a while ago because obviously that came to light, though. I mean, just her apology because of other issues regarding, unfortunate headlines and the way media reports, versus, I don't know, black people and white people to break down crudely.
Right. I guess.
So,
yeah, you're right. It was back in 2010.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that was a big deal, if people remember, because there was a huge, a big shooting at a black nightclub filled with black patrons, and then, so, things really, it was bad.
Wait, you're talking about the City Girl shooting? That was a restaurant.
Well, there was another one, though, wasn't it? I thought it was, like, some club. Was it at the City Girl?
There was a party at the City Girl. And most of the patrons, if memory serves, were black because he and his guests were celebrating something. I don't recall the details anymore.
Right.
And somebody opened fire. And somebody, as I understand it, returned fire. And that led to an unholy mess that then unfortunately got mishandled when the Buffalo News reported on it. The basic headline pointed out that most of the people that were shot had a criminal record, which in a sense of false equivalency, saying basically, well, these people had a criminal record, so they deserve to get shot anyway, which is what pretty much pissed everybody off.
Well, right. It's not a, yeah, that was not good.
No.
But in her, well, I guess since she wasn't here, but I mean, she was in charge, but she did stand up in, I mean, you like Margaret, right? Should we establish that or?
Margaret,
How do you feel about her?
Yeah. Bad position to be in, but I'm not there anymore. I liked Margaret for the most part. I respected her even more, but I'm not going to lie and say that we didn't have our share of personal difficulties. I had some concerns about the way things were run at the Buffalo News and certain people in key positions that didn't seem to understand that they had a blind spot where minority communities were concerned. One example that I did bring to Margaret's attention, do you remember the huge, massive deal that was made out of American Idol?
Yes.
The very first winner of American Idol, when that person, it was covered, the show was covered every night that it came on. There was a review the following morning. When the winner won, that was covered. When that winner came to Buffalo for a concert, that was covered with multiple photographers and I think two reporters. When the second winner happened, the exact same thing. Now, if memory serves, the third winner was Reuben Studdard, black person to win American Idol. There was no such follow-up after he won. There was a brief blurb in the features department announcing that he was coming to Buffalo, but it was literally a paragraph. And I remember this because at the time I was temporarily assigned a feature, so I edited that. There was, however, no one at the concert. The news didn't assign anyone. Although the following year, they did again. So, and again, that was another, I can't remember the name of the winner. But in any event, I had concerns about various blind spots in the news' coverage, where if someone that was black committed a crime, they were right there and would report on it. But if someone affluent and white committed a crime, it usually got buried further back in the paper, with a much smaller degree of an appearance in the paper. I had concerns about that. I did bring them to Margaret. She basically asked if I was accusing her of being racist, which I was not. It is not racist to have a blind spot. Now, was deliberately doing this, sure, but I never got the sense that she was deliberately attempting to attack anybody. But she also wasn't in charge of the day-to-day operations of the individual departments. If someone in features, for example, is ignoring what's going on, unless Margaret's completely aware of it, she's not going to notice. That kind of thing. I was concerned about the way the communities were covered, and quite frankly, in a lot of cases, the Black and Hispanic and Native American communities were not getting covered at all, unless crime happened.
Right, which is on the website now, you know, on digital, we can see obviously how many hits things take. And, you know, it's either sports stories about the Bills or horrendous crimes really get the most click because, you know, people are obsessed with sports and crime for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that just speaks to, you know, that's why we need better inclusion, right? Or just better representation across the board from everyone.
Absolutely. Especially in the people that are making the decisions on what to cover. When I started at the news, let's see if I remember this correctly. The city desk was all white men with a single exception, Laura Winchester. And then she retired and the city desk was again all white men for a great deal of time, actually, until they actually recruited Maki Becker for the city desk. As far as I know, currently, the city desk is still all white men, with the exception of Denise G. and Maki. But I've been gone for 2 years. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Tell them you're on a very important podcast.
Actually, I'm just going to text her and tell her, in a meeting, I'll call you back right after.
I haven't been, I haven't been in the office, so I don't even know what's on the city desk, but it's probably basically, the same with the exception of less people.
Oh yes.
But again, well, I mean, yeah, the inclusion problem or representation by everyone is, you know, still, something that we definitely everyone needs to work on that, I would say everywhere. And it's funny how touchy some white people get, though, if you just say you need to do this and they're like, are you calling me a racist? Especially if she meant it, because it's just like, no, you're just, you know, I mean, I don't want to brag, Trey, but I'm pretty woke, as the kids say.
Oh, God. First of all, the kids don't say woke anymore.
You know, I'm just saying, like, but I do have, like, you know, it's like, it's just hard. I mean, I'm inherently white. I mean, I'm a white person, so I know that I just have, I just grew up with everything on TV being white. So it's easy to be like, I don't understand. I realize that I don't have the perspective that you have because you grew up and you were watching TV and you're like, well, there's no one that looks like me. Right? So it's like, I wouldn't be able to understand that. That's why I would need you. Like, if I had a board for anything that was like, putting a product out, I would need you, because I would just be like, what is missing? You know what I mean? I wouldn't understand. And I understand that, though.
Well, one of the things that I've discovered about human nature is, generally speaking, we don't care unless it directly impacts us. Okay?
Well, that's true.
Quick example. I grew up on a steady diet of comic books. I mean, comic books were my jam as a kid, and I still read them today. And I just turned 50 in January, so that's a long time. 21 years ago, my daughter was born, and I walked into my comic shop with her in the stroller to check out the offerings for the day, you know, Wednesday, of course, which is when comics come out. And as I looked around the comic shop, I noticed all the posters of all the various characters on the walls. And for the first time, I noticed how scantily clad all the women were. And I remember thinking, I wonder what my daughter will think of this when she's older. And then something in my head just went click. I'd never noticed the hypersexualization of female characters before. I'd never noticed the fact that female characters are far more likely to be killed in order to boost the male character's character arc. But thinking about how my daughter might react when she got older, it just, something went click. All of a sudden, I had a reason to care. And then Maya got into comic books herself, so we've discussed this multiple times over the last decade and a half, roughly. And Maya liked strong female characters. She's a massive Wonder Woman fan. And, I mean, there's other characters that she likes, but for her, Wonder Woman is pretty much it.
Right.
So,
Well, it doesn't get better than Wonder Woman. She's like the Superman of of women. You know, how can you get more powerful than a Amazonic near god like woman?
Yeah, pretty much.
Who needs to be scantily clad, should I note, just for freedom of movement, you know? So it's like, ooh. And she still has to accessorize with her gold bracelets because women do like jewelry, let's be honest.
Well, the bracelets are silver, not gold.
Oh, okay.
The tiara and belt are gold, as is the lasso. Again, hardcore comic book geek here. But my main point about people caring about what directly impacts them is, you even look at the world around you right now, people are like, well, COVID-19, it's not real. I don't know anyone that's gotten sick from it. I don't know anyone who knows anyone that's gotten sick from it. So why should I wear a mask? Because that way you keep from getting it and you keep from spreading it to other people, you idiot. But we're so focused on, I know my rights, that we don't care about how what we do impacts anyone else, because it doesn't impact us in that moment. Although you may have noticed a more recent shift among conservatives when all of a sudden they actually started realizing, wait a minute, people that actually follow us are starting to die because they listen to us. Fox News changes tacked on it reportedly after their lawyers pointed out you could be held legally liable because you've been saying that you don't have to wear a mask, that COVID's a hoax. So then they changed their tune on it, except for the opinion, the talking heads.
Right. Well, yeah, I get your point. Like, nobody marches in a diabetes march if they don't have diabetes themselves, or if someone, a family member, doesn't have diabetes, right? Because they're not thinking about diabetes until you know someone.
Right.
So I mean, usually. But. Yeah.
So if we're talking about matters of race, if you don't have that in your face on an everyday basis, why are you going to think about it? I don't have a problem with white people that don't think about it because it's just never been part of their experience. That's human nature.
Right.
I don't have a problem with white people that say, you know what? I am proud to be white. And because there is no reason why they should not be. Yeah. You should be proud of who you are. You should be proud of whatever your race is has accomplished. Where I do have a problem is when they take those first two things and then say, because I am white, I am better than everyone else. No one else matters as much as my race does. And that's where we get into things like actual white supremacy and the whole argument over the concept of Black Lives Matter.
Right. Well, the problem, what I feel like, and I've been preaching for years now on the podcast, is that we just need a little more to speak to what you said, is just a little more empathy in general. Like, try to look at it from someone else's point of view, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like Star Trek. Like, well, just let's not lose our humanity.
You know what I
mean? It's just like, yeah, like, there's other things besides you. Like, real freedom isn't that you have to wear a mask. That just can, you know, like, we have freedoms, but we also have to live in a society with other people who could possibly get sick because they're not as, their immune system's not as good as yours or mine, you know what I mean? So it's just consideration to wear a mask. It's not taking away your freedoms.
Right.
I mean, if you want to be totally free, well, go live in a forest where you have just you and, you know, yourself. And then you can be totally free. Act like now. Invent your own language. Eat rocks. Yeah. Eat moss. Kill a deer. Do whatever the fuck you want. But, I mean, don't rely on anybody else because you can't. I mean, I have my mother's 72 now, so I'm not going to go. I'm going to wear a mask wherever I go when I go see her, you know, and then when I go see her, I still keep a little bit away, but I mean, I don't. My mother always did say I'd be the death of her, but I hate to prove people right, Trey, so I'm not going to kill my mother with COVID.
Fair enough.
But it's good, yeah, I mean, yeah, you realize just, I think it's karma, you know. A lot of times I know a lot of guys I grew up with who treated women less than respectfully, I should say, you know what I mean, because of youth and that kind of just being young and dumb, you know what I mean? But then now they have families, and guess what? It is true, though. A lot of those guys, all daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have to worry about, oh, shit, every guy out there is a scumbag. I have to really protect my daughter.
Yep.
And that's the way it goes. So, yeah, it's okay to have a little empathy for other people. And you know, not you can wear a mask. You still look cool. I love wearing a mask. Well, I shouldn't say love it, but it's not the biggest deal in the world, right?
Well, I wear a mask for my cosplay, so to me it's not that big of a deal. So,
good segue, because now I want to talk about that. I should put up some shot. When I put up this podcast, I'll put up some shots. You like to dress up as Deathstroke, right?
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. And you make a good Deathstroke because you're tall.
Mm-hmm.
You're tall as Batman. And do you like, I mean, what drew you to Deathstroke, though?
Well, it's all my daughter's fault. Maya had started cosplaying about 2 or 3 years earlier. And I have been helping her get stuff together to do her cosplay. And I would take her to conventions. And she fell in love with the whole thing. And she loved cosplaying as different characters. And then one year she said, Dad, when are you going to cosplay? I said, I'll eventually cosplay, but I just don't think it's for me. She's like, all right, fine. If money were no object, who would you cosplay as? And I immediately went Deathstroke because he's been one of my all-time favorite characters. I grew up as a Teen Titans fan, not the TV show, which didn't exist yet, but the comic book. And the first really good villain I ever encountered in that series was Deathstroke. Fell in love with the character, just awesome mercenary assassin type. One Eye is not afraid of that fact, and it doesn't matter to him that much because he can still kill you quickly enough. Think of an evil Captain America and you've got him. So Maya asked me, well, who would you cosplay as? I said, Deathstroke. And then she says, in this nice formal tone, sit down, father. So I sat, and she said, I want you to picture this. Imagine you're at a convention. I said, okay. Now, you see this rustle in the crowd. The crowd is parting. And you see a 6'5" Deathstroke, fully armed, fully armored, just striding through the crowd. And at that point, I realized, I've got to do it. Because the idea, and I am 6'5", the idea of me just doing that and just striding through the crowd like the angel of death just so appealed to me. So I came up with a costume, ordered a few weapons, made some other ones, made the costume, ordered the mask. And I went to the, what is it called? Drawing a blank.
You mean a convention? The Comic-Con?
Yeah, the convention in Toronto. Fan Expo. I went to Fan Expo up in Toronto, which is billed as the third biggest fan event on the continent. Rule number one about cosplaying, don't do it for the first time at a massive event. It almost killed me. Rule number two, if you're wearing heavy clothes and something covering your entire head, don't do it in 90-something degree heat. It almost killed me. But it was so much fun because I was able to get totally into the mindset and just stalk around as if anyone that got in my way was about to die. And what I didn't take into account was fan reaction. Because at my height, and you know, you've met me, I'm not a small guy. At the time, I weighed 298 pounds. But fully armed and armored, I just looked like massive, like a wall of death walking at you. I've slimmed down since then 50 pounds, but even still in the armor, I still look pretty darn impressive. So fans went berserk. And it took the first 3 hours of the con for me to finally get away from the various fans that wanted photos and poses for me to actually enjoy the rest of the convention.
I saw the photos. You put a good costume together for sure.
Yeah, thank you. I decided to just try bits and pieces of various looks that the characters had over the years. I decided to do something a little bit more realistic and fell in love with it. So my current gear, the ones that you saw in the picture, I can't wear a fair chunk of it anymore because I'm not the weight I was when I built the thing. The only thing that fits now, that actually fits, is the helmet and the pants and the male shirt underneath it. The overall vest doesn't work because I'm not almost 300 pounds. I'm 253 now. I need a smaller size.
Well, you got to adjust your costume, Trey.
Yeah, I'm going to redesign the vest. So
you can probably
actually only make... building more cosplay stuff as this COVID thing has gone. I originally built a staff to go with the cosplay because Deathstroke has a staff, and it just fell apart when I first tried it. So I built something a little bit different that actually looks like something that you might find in the Arkham Origins video game.
Yeah, I mean, you should probably make money as Deathstroke. You should probably just go to these conventions, and you could probably just do pictures all day long, I would assume.
I probably could, and to be honest with you, I've thought about that. I was thinking about trying out that out a little bit this year, but I'd have to pay for my own travel, that kind of thing. So it's not something I've truly, truly weighed, just something I played around with in the back of my head. But cosplaying is fun for me, especially because when I started, there weren't a lot of black men cosplaying. And my costume completely covers me. You can't tell what race I am inside of that outfit. So I would occasionally meet little kids that were black or Hispanic, and I'd take the helmet off, and they'd be shocked because they didn't know that there were any cosplayers that looked like them. And they'd freak out, and we'd talk, and they'd have a blast from it. And the parents are always like, thank you for talking to them. Now they know that they can do this. I'm like, I don't think I've done you any favors. Now they're going to spend lots and lots of money when they're older to do this. And now they're going to be addicted. I said, so maybe I should be, you know, giving you my condolences. But the opposite side of it is I've met some serious hardcore professional cosplayers over the years. And they're often impressed enough with what I put together to actually tell me that I've done a good job, which is high praise. But I usually talk to them about, like, how they deal with it. Like, that instant sense of celebrity, how they keep it from going to their head. My brother's still mad at me because I met a cosplayer, Linda Lee, L-E, who goes by Vampy Bit Me. Very talented cosplayer. I met her, and my brother's like, why didn't you get her autograph? Because I wasn't there for her autograph. I wanted to ask her some advice. And she seemed to welcome the change of pace, so why not?
She does like all kinds of different superheroes, though, right? Is that I might follow her on Instagram because she's
The two I know her best for is Nightwing and Vampirella, but she does a whole range of them.
Well, yeah, but cosplay is fun for, and I'm sure you probably met a lot of Batmans, right? Have you met some?
Oh my, one of my first, my second con, I ran into a pint-sized Batman. He couldn't have been more than 10. All he knew is that I was a villain and he needed to arrest me. I ran into a pint-sized Wolverine, roughly 8 years old, who came at me with his claws out. So he and I pulled my sword, and he and I had a little fake duel, and then I let him win. And I fell to the ground, he put his little foot on my chest and roared, victory, and the crowd was cracking up. But the kid's never going to forget that, you know?
No, you made someone's memory forever, Trey.
Right, and that's kind of the point. Right. So I'm doing it mostly for me because I enjoy it. The kids, however, get a massive kick out of it, and I don't know if I ever told you that. I used to teach back in the day, elementary through high school, a brief stint at community college. But one of the things that I was always happy with doing is making learning fun for the kids. And this is also another way for me to interact with kids and make them happy and gleeful and joyful and run them out of energy so their parents can take them back home as little wet, limp noodles of spent energy. So that then they sleep tonight and the parents are like, yay, a break. But it's just something about these kids looking up and seeing someone that looks absolutely dangerous and ruthless. And they just have, like, this awe shining in their eyes. And I've never been much for alcohol. I've never been much for drugs. But I can tell you that feeling has got to be better than either one.
Probably. Well, and then it goes back to you, you know, giving back. This is you giving back and being a good person. Which is weird because you're from Ohio and I've never met a good person from Ohio.
Why is everyone so down on Ohio?
Because it's a swing state, Trey, and they never swing the right way. Never. Well, maybe 20 years ago, but since I've been following Ohio, let's put it that way. No, So you were born in Ohio. When did you come? Did you come to UB, or when did you come to New York State?
I was born in Cleveland. I grew up in a small tourist town, mostly white, called Chagrin Falls. When I graduated from high school, my younger sister was the only minority left in the entire school system. Mm-hmm. Minority of any kind, by the way.
Okay.
So I went to, let's see, I met my future wife when I was in college. She was going to Penn State, so I would visit her in Buffalo from time to time. We graduated. We got married a month later. We moved out to Portland, Oregon. We stayed there for 2 years. Moved back to Buffalo just in time for the worst winter in Buffalo history. We said, to hell with this, and moved down to North Carolina. Stayed there for a couple more years. Our daughter was born in summer of 99. We moved back to Buffalo. We've been here ever since.
Well, that sounds nice. And, of course, I kid Ohio, because you used to have family there, or...
Yeah. My parents still live there, as well as my younger sister. My brother is out in California. My older sister is in D.C.
Okay. Well, you know, LeBron James is from Ohio, so it can't be all bad. You and LeBron came out of there, so.
Exactly.
And that's just. Well, and of course, yeah, New York State has its problems. A lot of states have its problems, but. But if you were spend any time in Cleveland, that's basically the mirror image of Buffalo, just on the other side of the lake. So you were ready for it.
Oh yeah, what do they used to call Cleveland? The mistake on the lake.
I think so, maybe something like that. But it is basically the same.
One of my earliest memories of the city of Cleveland, because remember I grew up outside of it, was the time that Lake Erie actually caught on fire. Because there were so many pollutants in the water, something went boom, and the surface of Lake Erie actually caught on fire. I must have been maybe 6, 7 at the time. I just remember looking at the news report, and I remember thinking, this makes no sense. Water doesn't burn.
Well, yeah. I think there was a comedian, Jay Moore, actually had a bit about that, because he was doing a gig in there. In Cleveland, and people were you know, heckling him a little bit, and he's like, hey, don't heckle me, man, your lake started on fire. Like, how does that happen? How does your lake start on fire?
I do not know.
Well, because it was very dirty. I think it's been cleaned up. Well, Cleveland's gone through they got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they turned great, and then they turned dirty again, and then I think they're back on the upswing. You know, the Rust Belt is a tough area.
Mm-hmm.
It forges tough people. And you fit into that. Not even being Deathstroke, but just, you know.
Mm.
Well, this has been good. I have enjoyed talking to you. We should call this part one, because I'd actually like to talk to you some more, but I have an appointment.
Okay.
So I'm gonna, you know, we'll continue this later. I'm sure my fans, I have fans in the Nether regions. The Netherlands, I should say, but to me, it's the Nether Regions.
Belgium. Oh, what? Southtowns?
No, I'm talking like really in Belgium. I get a lot of downloads from Belgium. I'm sure they'll want to hear more about this Deathstroke and this cosplay. We can get into that some more. And more, I would really like to talk comic book movies with you, but we kind of...
Sure.
...out of time.
That's fun, especially since I've written most of the news's coverage of those.
Well, that's true, and you're doing some writing on the side, right?
Yes.
Right, you're writing your own. Or you're writing a novel, though.
Yes, I am. Two of them, as a matter of fact.
Whoa, ambitious. Okay,
yeah. Totally different genre, so that makes it easier.
All right, well, let's end it here. Hang on the line, though. I just want to talk to you for a sec. But again, thanks for calling in, or let me call you. Hang on one sec.